Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Imran Syed, CEO of Hedgeproof.
You have to have an obsession with the problem, not the solution. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs are very anchored on, you know, this is a solution and this is the way we're going to fix it. And they struggle, right? Because the market will tell them something different. Investors will tell them something different. Even within their organization, they might get competing viewpoints. And I always find if you obsess with the problem, you'll find the solution. You know, it may not be the first one, but you'll eventually get to it.
This is Imran. After leading a high eight-figure exit at Instapage, Imran witnessed how misalignment among leadership destroyed tens of millions of enterprise value during a failed product launch. Instead of moving on, this failure became his obsession. He spent 6 months deeply researching why people stay at or leave organizations before founding Hedgeproof, creating a company built around the belief that work should have purpose, meaning, and fulfillment. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Imran to my podcast. We explored a counterintuitive approach of obsessing over problems rather than solutions, and why most entrepreneurs get this backwards. Imran challenges conventional wisdom about scaling teams, explaining why the future belongs to smaller, tightly aligned organizations rather than sprawling enterprises. His approach turns traditional metrics upside down, focusing on revenue per employee over headcount growth, and demonstrates how creating clear value frameworks enables sustainable business decisions. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, how to distinguish between an itch and a burning desire when evaluating startup ideas. Secondly, why investing 6 months in problem research before building anything created Imran's foundation for success. Thirdly, how creating a simple four-value framework dramatically improves decision-making and prevents feature bloat. And lastly, while revenue per employee is becoming the critical metric for AI-era companies, replacing the traditional focus on headcount growth. Well, hi, Imran. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Hey, it's my pleasure. It's been a journey to get here, and I'm so glad that we're able to do this.
Yeah, exactly. We've been in contact on LinkedIn for quite a while right now. And I mean, everybody that's listening to this podcast, if you're in the software space, if you're leading a company, software company, or aspiring one, just start following Imran because every post is spot on. So that's my plug for you.
I appreciate
that.
I get
intrigued from a number of perspectives. And yeah, I saw your background. I've read this first Oracle, and you've been the CEO of a company called Instapage. And then since 24, you founded Hedgeproof. And here we are. Before we start talking about like the journey and particularly your company, what you're up to right now, what drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
That's a great question. And, I think in different moments of my life, I can define drive in unique ways, right? You know, there's been moments of my life where my drive has really come from trying to prove something. And most of the time that proof point is to myself. You'll probably hear me talk about, I do think I'm my biggest critic. I am the person that I, you know, often try to measure myself against and make sure I'm striving. And right now, my drive for Hedgeproof really has to do with I have this ultimate belief that there's a better way that we can align to work. And we spend most of our waking hours doing it. And there has to be purpose, there has to be meaning, there has to be fulfillment with it. And I think for many of us, especially, the generations entering the workforce like Gen Zs, we're missing that. We're missing that connectivity. And I feel super driven to be a part of the story that helps us fall in love with work again, makes us want to stay with organizations. And I think the future of organizations are actually going to be smaller teams, but very tightly aligned, doing meaningful work together. And some of the biggest companies of our generation are yet to emerge. And I'm excited to be a part of the story that helps find the people that build those companies.
Fascinating. That is exactly one of the posts that really got me going. I think I even made a post about it myself, about that just amplifying it. And that was that post where you said, okay, I almost walked away when Techstars reached out. And I mean, the essence of the whole thing is indeed, you walked into Techstars with an idea about hiring, and you walked out as a rebellion against meaningless work. Which is, I agree. First of all, also when you start a software company, if you don't believe, if you're not truly passionate about it, and that passion word is often taken out of context, but really, that it's super hard to drive change in the market. And that's what I read in
Absolutely.
that post.
Absolutely. And, a mentor of mine and investor in Hatchproof, one of the bits of feedback he gave me when I was thinking about launching Hatchproof and diving into it, he asked me, is it an itch or is it a burning desire? And if it's an itch, leave it alone. If it's a burning desire, follow it through. And it absolutely is a burning desire. It scares me every day, every week. And you probably see it in my writing as well. There's a lot of vulnerability there. And, anybody in my position that says they've got it all figured out, they're lying or they're not being true to themselves. And many days, I'm figuring things out. And the second thing I'll say is you have to have an obsession with the problem, not the solution. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs are very anchored on, this is a solution and this is the way we're going to fix it. And they struggle, right? Because the market will tell them something different. Investors will tell them something different. Even within their organization, they might get competing viewpoints. And I always find if you obsess with the problem, you'll find the solution. It may not be the first one, but you'll eventually get to it.
True. That's of course why the road is bumpy. And sometimes also the problem is shifting because of all kind of factors. Exactly. Well, I mean, it's a nice bridge to your company. You started it in, let me see, 24. So that's a year and a half ago. What was the big problem that you saw?
And I use the term started it very loosely, right? I exited Instapage. We had a really high eight-figure exit. And my inspiration was really founded at Instapage. And there is a lot of connective tissue in my experience that kind of leads me to, you ever feel tone like everything that you did was meant to be and bring you to this point in life? And that's truly how I felt. And at Instapage, we were launching this new product called PostClick. It was a really, really big bet and swing. And the product was designed to build landing pages at scale automatically. And so we were in the AI business before it actually became in fashion. And we failed ultimately. And, with any product, so much goes wrong in making it work. And we're able to market it, we're able to sell it, we're able to, service it to some degree. But eventually we failed. And if I think back and I think about what was the underlying reason that we failed at this product? It truly, for me, got down to we had a misalignment on our leadership team on what we were going to build. We had a very divided thought, right? And the person who had hired me and, he was a great leader, but he was very anchored on Instapage and the business that was already working and established and had been around for almost a decade at that point. And the founder of Instapage, he wanted to bet the farm on this new vision and where he wanted to take the company. And it actually divided us. And what I realized was that Misalignment can kill and destroy companies, you know? And I saw tens of millions of enterprise value just disappear. And I remember thinking to myself, what if we could have predicted that misalignment between these two people? What could this company have looked like? And I just couldn't shake that thought. And the more and more research I did into it, the more and more I validated we work for people, right? And at the end of the day, we stay or leave a company because of the people we work for. And that connection becomes really important, but we don't hire that way. We hire very attuned to skills. And we saw this, you know, at the turn of the century with Taylorism and, you know, the Industrial Revolution, where we started doing skills matching. And you hear a lot about it today. And it made so much sense when the vast majority of the workforce worked in a production environment or a factory environment where we're trying to, you know, match up skills. But it doesn't work today. And, you know, when I talk to people about what they love about their company, the first thing they'll talk to me of is about the people, about the manager, about the leadership. Then they talk about the types of projects that they do and the things that they accomplish. And lastly, you know, it has to do with the company itself. And, you know, I wanted to tap into that and really, you know, reapproach the problem. And nobody was really taking a lens to it from a different viewpoint.
Fascinating. Yeah, the industry still thinks that way, and you decide, okay, it's going to be a different way. Well, I mean, just to kind of introduce you to, well, the audience to what Hatchproof does. What is Hatchproof in like in two sentences?
Hatchproof is a agentic AI that uses behavioral science to align candidates and hiring managers differently from the way we've done it before. And then we follow you through the full employee life cycle. And so not only do we help you hire better and create that alignment, we'll follow that through with our onboarding and the full employee life cycle, which includes one-on-one performance reviews, et cetera. We're agentic, and so we've kind of gone from a co-pilot idea to autopilot on the way we've designed and built our platform. And that's very exciting, and you know, I'm happy to jump into that as well.
Well, definitely. It's one of these posts that you also wrote about. In AI, you were building an AI companion that works for work that actually helps. And what struck me, and it's also in line with actually this whole podcast, a thought partner, a guide, a tool that brings clarity, alignment, and connection, and connect on your behalf. I mean, if you go back to my first episode of the podcast and the people that I started to invite back then, I was at that point in time talking about augmentation. It was about the technology that if you bring people and technology together, you can achieve things that you've never been able to do before. So many things are about automation, but the augmentation side is about making people do the things that that they're proud of, that the company get proud of, and so on. So how is this what you're building here aligned with that?
You know, I think augmentation is a very interesting word, and for me, the word I often use is fulfillment, falling in love with work again. And if we take a look at the marketplace, we're not staying at work like we used to, right? You know, if I look at US statistics, baby boomers on average stayed in organizations for about, you know, a decade, right? 8.9 years. And millennials are, you know, 4.9. And now, if I take a look at Gen Zs, they're averaging about 1 year and 8 months, right? 1.5 years, 1 year and 8 months. And it's a completely different relationship with work. And we've kind of become attuned to, you know, most people think this, like, oh, if you want to make more money, you got to switch jobs, right? You got to go from one place to the other place. And I, you know, I disagree with that statement. Right. I disagree with that statement. And I kind of got into this with this notion of, like, you know, I'm not naive enough to believe that we can help people, you know, maybe stay at jobs for 30 years. But what's the power in 1 more year? What's the power in 2 more years? And what does that mean for organization and individual development as a whole? And so the mission really started with, like, how do you retain people longer? Right. How do you keep people inside an organization? And so, Not so much augmentation, but really just rethinking like the fulfillment values that we see in individuals nowadays, and how do we tap into that as an organization? And so I've been so lucky to have some, great tenure at organizations, and a lot of it came with, taking on different projects, taking on different challenges, seeing growth inside that organization. And so how do we help interpret that? And lastly, I'll say, like, we touched a little bit on skills-based. I don't, don't get me wrong, skills are very important, right? I would not hire, I don't know, a nuclear scientist for a job unless they had the particular skill sets to do that job. But the other dimensions often get overlooked, right? And Hatch Proof really, brings in those other dimensions, and we call them habits, aspiration, temperament, convictions, and hard skills. That's where the name Hatch comes from. And the proof is the idea that you're doing something different and we're proving it. So Hatch Proof, and that's the name of the company. And that's really where it originates from.
Nice, like how you put it all together, because it's a catchy name, first of all, but now it also has a story, and then
Thank you.
that story sticks. No, but completely, you're right. It's the and those things that you mentioned there, the skills are easy to find and to search for because it's on LinkedIn and it's on all the other places because you leave trails. But the other things are so hard to measure, and that's where I think, yeah, the only way to do it right is to put AI in. What I liked
Well,
about one of your
and
things.
yeah, and skills is actually, it's a fleeting aspiration, especially in this age of AI.
Exactly.
We often look at this T model, right? Be very good at one thing and have a little bit of depth on other things. And I think that T model is actually going to turn into almost a rectangle, because we're going to get really good at a lot of things thanks to AI, right? You've heard of like vibe coding, and you've got non-technical people, building platforms and building software, and it's only gonna, continue, and we're gonna see that. You've got people that have never written before starting to get a lot better at writing, right? Because you've got tools out there. And so I think skills is important, but it's fleeting. And really alignment, it's like Jim Collins, in Good to Great, one of the best business books, one of the I'd say top 5, 10 business books of all time. He always kind of hit this point home of get the right people on the bus and then figure out where you're going. And really, essentially, we're just getting back to that. We're getting back to who are the right people on the bus and figure out where you're going, because you're going to evolve, you're going to change, and the adaptability factor is really important for employees nowadays and organizations. And we want to help organizations find those fits.
Yeah, you make a fantastic point on this adaptability, and I call it resilience often. But sometimes it's both. You cannot stay stale anymore. I've seen it for myself, and I started for myself also. You thought you knew everything, but boy, I was wrong. Yeah, and now you say it's this T thing that I had in the past is now indeed a square, and it's becoming a big square. So it's, yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating how that is going to evolve, and what that is going to do indeed to retaining people. One of the quotes that I liked from one of your posts is that the turnover, you say turnover is not just a number, it's a sign of a deeper problem, and I completely agree with that. It's so costly. It's all the effort that you put into people and what they do for the business is just disappearing, and yeah, so many companies are still on the notion of, yeah, let's hire someone new.
Yeah,
That's a bit.
it amazes me, how most organizations, and I've worked inside some of these organizations where they don't put real hard costs into the impact that this makes. I think it's somewhere between an organization of about 100 spends somewhere between $660 to $2.6 million a year on just turnover. Right. And that's a small size organization. And if you think about it from a macro level, in the United States, we're spending $1.9 trillion a year on latency costs. And it's expected to increase to almost $3 trillion in the next 5 years. And it just seems like madness to me, right? It's madness to me that almost half the people we hire leave. And We really suck at hiring from a skills-based perspective. And, some of us and we deem experience are a little better than others, but most of the time it's a flip of a coin and we introduce a lot of bias and it's just we're not really good at it.
Yeah, I think that's the right word, bias there. Yeah, it's telling something. And I mean, to your point on the trillion, everybody sees those numbers, but nobody seems to do anything with it because it's a huge macroeconomic problem, but it doesn't hit them on the okay on a company level, the expensive problem to them. And maybe sometimes it's even like you say, it's bias, but sometimes also complacency. To the point that you said this idea came from my previous company. So you started this. Not sure how far you are already in the, how many customers you currently already have, but what do you see as being a fundamental choice that you made very early on the journey that is already starting to make an impact? Because I mean, you could go so many different directions in 2024.
And I took my first 3 to 6 months to really understand the problem. And I think I must have talked to everybody from key executives to anyone I would come across and try to ascertain and ask questions about. What keeps you at organizations? What causes you to leave organizations? Where do you think work is headed? And I will say that that time really grounded me in understanding the space. What also makes it really unique and different for me is in 2021, we had an HR leader at my organization of Instapage, and they left, and it gave me an opportunity to take over that team. And I feel really grateful. And my style, by the way, Ton, is like, so when I am hiring an executive leader on my team, I typically go in and I do that function. And it's almost painful, right? Because at all times I've had a full-time job and I dive in and I do that job. And I do it so that I can really understand the problems in that space and help that leader kind of get up to speed effectively. And I went deep into the HR function. And it was my first time, 2021, getting involved in HR function. And I think about what was happening in the world, right? So we as society have gone into a pandemic in 2020. In the United States, we're figuring out like, so Instapage is a very San Francisco-based startup. We're figuring out like how do we work remotely? How do we connect with people remotely? And I just remember thinking to myself, gosh, there's never been a more important time in the history of work that HR has been so pivotal, right?
Yeah,
To
sure.
usher in this new era of work for the people. And there's all these questions. And I saw disconnected systems. I saw we had offices in Poland and Romania and the United States, and we had a completely like disconnected story. And I felt like, man, I want to be involved in it. And I got a chance to use some great software. As a part of it, I sat on the product advisory board at Lattice. We use tools like Greenhouse and Workable. And so I saw the tools that were in front of me, and it gave me also a really good perspective of the limitations they had. And so when I got into Hatchproof, one of the questions I get asked is like, Imran, you've got so much MarTech, ad tech experience. Why don't you just go build something there? And the truth is, like, more than MarTech, ad tech, I've always been fascinated with people. And if I think about the next 10 years of what's about to happen, or even the next 5 years, work is fundamentally going to shift. And it was meaningful for me to build in this space.
Yeah, exactly. Well done, but you first spent the first half year really understanding the problem. Because that is also what I see. It's the people think they understand the problem, but they are still so most of the time three, four, five layers off. And until the point until you get it concrete, that it's yeah, it becomes you get a sensory feeling when you hear about it, then you're getting very close. And you can only do that with talking to people and distilling from there. So what did you do then? You understood the problem. What decision did you take on? Okay, this is our first bet to build something. To build a minimum remarkable product, I would always call it.
Well, the first thing I recognize is I needed help. And there's a great African proverb of if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think I made a choice that I wanted to go far. My goal for Hatchproof is I want this to be a multi-billion-dollar company. I want this to be a sustainable organization. And I set out and started building about 6 months ago. So mid-2024, we started building. And I really use this notion of we are going to leverage AI from a co-pilot standpoint. And we started building a SaaS platform. And really the thesis was let's collapse the stack, right? So let's bring you software that allows you to hire, that allows you to onboard and follow that employee life cycle all in one place, and there's value to that. And then let's add these dimensions from the behavioral science perspective of what makes somebody connect. And truthfully, I thought that was a strong value add. And for me, that felt like, gosh, we're five times better than what's out there today, or 10 times better than what's out there today. And another really big piece of learning that I got was, and this is really talking to our design partners and prospective customers, is like that wasn't a big enough leap. And it wasn't a big enough leap. And I most recently accelerated our roadmap and really made the shift from co-pilot to autopilot. And that's really where agentic starts to come into play. And
Let me make a small interruption here. Imran just made a critical remark that reveals a critical product development insight that building a marginally better product isn't sufficient. The market taught him that being better, even significantly better, doesn't drive adoption. People won't change established behaviors without something fundamentally different that creates a step change in value. This explains why many startups and even scale-ups with improved offerings still fail to get traction despite objectively better features. It's a trait remarkable software companies master. They aim to be different, not just better. And Imran demonstrated that by reimagining the nature of work itself rather than simply improving existing HR processes. Secondly, they master the art of curiosity, and Imran spent months deeply understanding problems before attempting to solve them. And lastly, they focus on the essence. The example here is Imran establishing clear values that drive every decision, challenging everything that doesn't move the needle towards retention. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
We started building with an agentic framework, and so we've got a candidate agent, a hiring agent, and a performance agent helping to not only drive outcomes or lead an individual through it, but it acts, it thinks, it reacts, and it drives some of the outcomes that we want throughout these different workflow processes. And so, right now we've been building. We have massive, enormous, pipeline and traction. We're a Techstars New York company, and that's fantastic market signaling. And Techstars reached out to me and said, "Hey, we love what you're talking about here, and would you come talk to us?" And they get it; they get the problem and the disruption. And so, we've got a lot of momentum going into this year.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, it's fascinating that you say, and then it points out to another thing as well that I see a lot is you can have the problem defined, and you can start thinking about, okay, I'm going to build something, and it's better. Whatever the better is it 10% or 1x or 2x, but it doesn't really matter how much better it is. As the customer doesn't believe that it's enough to make the jump, to go away from something else, it's not good enough.
And, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can understand the co-pilot to autopilot aspect to that. So what finally made the difference for customers to say, okay, now this is exactly what we need to have? And it's also fascinating that everybody has been, there's a lot of talking going on the shrinking half cycle of your product, and you haven't, you're just starting, but already the half life cycle of your product is already shrinking so fast. I mean, I come from the world where we were still delivering and shipping products on CDs, and there was a release cycle of 2 years, you know? So it's fascinates me how at the moment also, how do you stay ahead and how do you make those choices to stay ahead, but also to differentiate in the market? Because everybody's screaming. How do you go about it?
You're right, the market is, rapidly changing, and I think in both of our lifetimes, this has probably been the fastest period of change. And it's certainly not going to slow down much. And I think for me as a leader, it's really important to be steadfast in core elements of what I'm building and why I'm building, but then also be very fluid in ideas of how we're going to absorb, right? Half Proof has never been kind of focused on being chasing features type of organization. It's always been, very core to our North Star, which is retention. And we want to help people stay at jobs longer, right? And that's essentially what we want to do. And we speak to that, right? We have the ability to assess risk, but we also have the ability to connect people in different ways within the organization. I'm an avid reader. I absorb a lot of content. I make sure that I'm staying ahead of the curve. I'm very future focused. And I also have like a strong vision for what that future workplace looks like. And I think, Tom, like why that's important to me is like I'm not following somebody else's vision of what work is going to be. I'm setting that vision. And I think there's a distinction between those two. And I'm also helping to educate the market. And I love that you engage with my content on LinkedIn. That was very important to me early on to make sure that I became a thought leader in the space. And, I've set out to do that and be able to kind of set that vision for where organizations take work.
Exactly. So important what you say there, this vision. And to have a vision that is outside in, because so many companies, they believe that their vision is, okay, we want to become that $1 billion company. Well, that will come the moment your vision is so true that the bulk of the market wants to be part of this journey with you. And that always starts from an
Absolutely.
outside in perspective. So I
Absolutely.
like that part. And it's about indeed putting the guardrails on. Okay, this is what we are going to do. We don't care what others are going to do. This is what we believe is what's needed to make that shift happen. And I love it what you say, that the North Star is stay longer, stay at jobs longer, because it doesn't corner you in terms of what type of technology you're using. You can constantly start to challenge yourself and say, hey, what else can we do? Or what are we doing wrong here? Or what isn't working anymore? So that, who knows what technology you're going to use in 5 years' time to do this? Maybe it's not agentic AI anymore. How do you go about that?
Absolutely. Maybe it isn't agentic AI anymore. And like one of the things that we're always striving for is before we even think about a feature, before we even think about building something out, does it meet that core vision, right? Does this help people stay at jobs longer, right? Does this help employers keep people at jobs longer? And the other thing, our values at the company. So our values are simplicity, progress, unity, and data. And when we're building out features, I make sure that everything that we build fits into that value criteria. So the value criteria of the people inside the company and the value criteria of what we build for our customers, it's the same value system, right? And so there's never a miss. We want to make sure that what we're building actually gives value to our customers. And that was also very, very important. In fact, inside of our Notion board, like you have to specify what value this is going to hit. Even if you have an idea for a feature, you have to specify what value it's going to hit. Does it simplify the user experience? Does it provide more data? Does it unify systems? Does it help progress and make them 1% better? And so these are questions that we're constantly asking and really keeping that vision front and center.
Yeah, I mean, good that you say that, because it's sort of your simple framework for saying yes and saying no. And I mean, I come from the software business. At some point, I was working with one of the teams at 300 developers, and it wasn't enough. Where other people had five developers, and it wasn't enough. But having 300 would be a dream. But if you do not clarify enough, like why when you're gonna say no, Because everything at the end is always like tempting to put in, but it's more about
Absolutely.
saying no and staying true to the vision. And I, if you have something that is simple where people can make their own choices, you come a long way.
Yeah. And if I can just add to that, I think one of the things that's changed over time is we have a lot more voices that we hear, right? We've got social media, we've got experts on LinkedIn, we've got experts in our network, we've got investors, we've got our cousin down the street, we've got our brother-in-law. Everybody's got an opinion, right,
Yeah,
on
exactly.
what you should do. And I think filtering that is a very, very important skill set for a founder, knowing what to take in, what to take out. I've seen leaders fail because they flow with every direction the wind blows and don't have a center, and that can also jeopardize. And then the complete opposite of that is being so stubborn that you don't take other inputs. Napoleon shouldn't have marched into Prussia, right? But he just wouldn't listen. And, that was very stubborn leadership. And, we see it all the time, and we see it in business, and we see it manifest itself. And I think there's this healthy balance between the two.
Yeah, got two questions on that because you trigger something in me. A lot more
I
questions.
hope it's not too much on Napoleon.
No, no, no. But
Yeah.
looking at over time, you have also a long background in technology, like I have myself. But what is a key metric that you stopped tracking that you thought was crucial, or maybe the other way around? Like, how has your definitions of success changed over time?
A key metric that I'm really into right now is revenue per employee. And that is one that, it's not new. We've heard of this back in the day, and it wasn't as prioritized, right? I think you saw a lot of startups really focus on top line revenue growth and invest in that and truly never get to EBITDA positivity. And they had some healthy investors that kind of kept in. I don't think that type of business is what we're going to see. I think the founders that are coming out of this period are a lot more operationally sound. They have to be. They're a lot more scrappy. Again, I think organizations are actually going to shrink in size. And I believe it was Instagram was the first company I saw. It must have been 12, 13 people and hit a $1 billion valuation. And that's when we're like, oh my God, right? We used to think you needed thousands of people to build a company of that scale. And so that's going to go away. And so I do think, like in the world of AI, revenue per employee is going to become an important metric that we're going to measure.
Exactly. Yeah, I always talk about it as ARR per employee or MRR per employee, but it's also a metric that I applaud for because if that metric is at the right height, it says so much about the efficiency in the business.
Yeah.
And very often you hear founders say, "Okay, well, how are you doing?" And yeah, we've been really well. In last year, we grew, we doubled a number of employees from this to that. And I was like, "Okay, should I congratulate you with that?" Because I have also seen companies that sort of tripled every year and added one person,
Yeah.
and that goes a long way. Is it also the like the revenue per employee? It's a leverage type thing, right? Is it also what you keep in mind in terms of, okay, I want to build a sustainable business, a business that actually stays along for a long time, or are there other things that you do with around it as well?
Well, as a former COO, I could talk about metrics for hours with you. And
Yeah.
I think for me, metrics have always been, does everybody get it, right? Like, does every person in the organization get it? And a revenue per employee metric is one that I think every employee can truly capture and understand, right? It's very difficult unless you're close to the numbers to really understand like how your EBITDA is calculated, or your cost of sale or cost of goods sold, and how you're thinking about CAC. And but what people do get is I cost a dollar, but I drive $2, right?
Yeah.
into an organization, and that's a healthy organization, right? And so anytime you can, and we're seeing some fantastic multiples in AI space right now of revenue per employee, and I think that's honestly going to continue. This romantic notion of the value of my organization is depicted by how many people work there. I think that's like a recipe for failure, truly. And you know, this if everybody has a purpose, if everybody has, you know, this is what they are doing, you should hire for that role and you should grow for that role. But it's gotta have meaning in what you're doing, not just like, hey, I'm going to throw bodies at it. And we've seen throwing bodies at it being the plan, and especially like 2020, 2021, and some of the companies that emerged at that time. And for me, I want to go far, but I want to go with a handful of people that are going to get us far. And I think with AI, we're going to be able to do it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it drives the wrong behavior, you know? Yeah, top line is one thing, but if you get customers in that take far longer than normal to implement and far more time to get happy and all of those type of things, it just drives the wrong thing. So I can very often already looking at just what that one number, see if a company is on the right track or not. And yeah, I mean, more companies should pay attention to that. So glad for bringing that up. Looking at the time, two more questions. One thing is because you said, okay, I'm my biggest critic in the beginning of this interview. And I heard throughout the interview that you're high on curiosity, which is trait number four in my book. What is a skill or an area of knowledge that you're currently trying to absorb to stay ahead of the curve?
Oh, what a great question. Believe it or not, I am working on something that isn't so related to, you know, coding or development or product, you know, innovation, but it has to do with more of how I show up as a leader and making sure that I'm listening first and asking a lot of questions and driving that curiosity behavior. And I think being a founder, I found it very easy to get pulled into a lot of different areas of the organization, right? My days could go from writing marketing content for our website to Figma designing, you know, a feature set, to engineering, looking at a sprint. And it's so natural to get pulled into all of these types of things. And I had to, you know, really step back and be like, how am I showing up as a leader? And how am I going to scale this? You know, am I approaching it from a place of empowerment? Or am I, you know, almost hindering people's growth by being everything to them? And I've been part of organizations where even at scale, everybody continues to go to the leader for the answers. And I didn't want to create that organization. I wanted people with answers, with ideas to come and show up in the organization. And so, you know, I think the skill set is, you know, how you show up and what that says about you as a leader.
Fascinating. I mean, it's also of course, the trick to why people stay longer because now they have that, well, they earn the power to make those decisions themselves and to explore things and make mistakes and make a bigger impact rather than just hiding behind, yeah, you told me I needed to do this. It's a big thing. Exactly. Yeah. How do you make sure that also other people in your organization do the same?
Lead by example. You know, when I was a young teenager, Don, I have two very wonderful parents, and I remember I took a marker and on my room wall, I wrote a quote. And the next day, they showed up with a pack of markers and said, anytime you think of something that you like, feel free to write it. And they went so far as like when their friends would come over or guests would come over, they'd bring them upstairs and show them. and be like, isn't this amazing? Like, look at all these amazing things he's writing on the wall. And I say that because, like, I didn't realize it then, but like most parents would be like, what are you doing? You're
You're ruining your
destroying the
room.
wall. You're ruining your room. We're gonna have to paint over that. And I had parents that were like, oh yeah, this is amazing. Keep going. And I come from like a very, very strong net where I never felt like I could fail. And the term failure didn't even exist in my vocabulary. It's almost like I would just learn something, whether I succeed or fail, I'm just learning and I'm just moving forward. And I remember one of the things I had written on my board was an Emerson quote where it was a said an army of deers led by a lion would always defeat an army of lions led by a deer. And to me, that's what leadership is, right? And you got to show up and you got to lead by example. And to answer your question, and I always want to show up and lead by example and empower the people around me to do the same.
Yeah, very, very well said. Thank you for doing so. Last question then. What would be, maybe you already answered that, but what is a lesson that you learned or a tidbits of wisdom that you've gained over time that you could share with other aspiring tech CEOs? A do and a don't.
A do and a don't. Let's see. A do is fail fast and learn from it and move on. Don't let that failure define you. And a don't is don't build a business for your investors. Build a business for your customers.
Well said.
And, I think there's a lot of founders, looking to raise capital and, out there and are saying things or are sharing things. And I think sometimes they lose sight of who they're trying to help and support in the long run. And it's important to keep that front and center.
Well said. Perfect closing words. Thank you very much for sharing the wisdom. Where can people go to find out more about Hatchproof or to say hi to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Please visit us at www.hatchproof.com. Find me on LinkedIn. I'm sure we'll put a link in here. I'd love to connect with you. Do mention you heard me here, and I would love to kind of keep in touch.
Perfect. Good. Well, thank
Awesome.
you very much. I'll keep following you on the next part of the journey. Maybe we'll do a podcast in another 2 years or so to see where you are right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love it.
And
Cool.
you've added five people and you've hundredfold the company in value.
I
That would be a fascinating story.
can't
Good.
wait. I can't wait.
Exactly. Yeah. But I love your argument or your point about build a business for your customers. So true. Thanks.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
And this ends the conversation with Imran. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Imran Sayed, founder and CEO of Hatchproof. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.